informative and unfettered. O'Meara and Borgeson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome. This is the O'Meara and Borgeson Show. I'm Kelly O'Meara.
And I'm Christina Borgeson. Okay, who did it? Who blew up the Nord Stream pipelines last Monday and why? Everyone seems to agree it was sabotage. Of course, fingers are pointing in all directions. For example, here's Johannes Peters, an expert in maritime strategy and security at the Institute for Security Policy at Germany's Kiel University, pointing the finger at Russia and explaining why.
When you look at the complexity of the attacks and how difficult it is to carry out such an act of sabotage, then it's most likely that a state actor is involved. And there are only one state actor in the Baltic that is where the possibility, the capabilities, and the motivation come together, and that is obviously Russia. One might be an accident. That could be a solution if there would be only like one leakage. But if we look at the fact that we have three leakages that occurred almost simultaneously, then it's most likely that it's sabotage. Well, one can speculate about it, but one possible aim of Russia might be strategic signaling towards NATO and towards the West to show, look, we are able to manipulate, to sabotage critical infrastructure mounted on the seabed.
Okay, so that's his take. Others suspect the U.S., particularly in light of these two comments made in January by Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland and February by President Biden.
With regard to Nord Stream 2, we continue to have very strong and clear conversations with our German allies, and I want to be clear with you today. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward.
Well, I'll take a couple questions each. Reuters, Andrea, you have the first question.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Chancellor Scholz. Mr. President, I have wanted to ask you about this Nord Stream project that you've long opposed. You didn't mention it just now by name, nor did Chancellor Scholz. Did you receive assurances from Chancellor Scholz today that Germany will, in fact, pull the plug on this project if Russia invades Ukraine? And did you discuss what the definition of invasion could be?
If Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then there will be no longer a Nord Stream 2. We will bring an end to it.
How will you do that exactly, since the project and control of the project is within Germany's control?
We will, I promise you, we'll be able to do it.
Oh, and then the CIA piped up last summer to say that they warned European allies that the pipelines were vulnerable, but they didn't give any specifics. So again, who did it and why? Our guest today is one of Germany's premier investigative reporters and host of his own show here on TNT. If anyone can bring historical context and shift through the BS and political posturing to analyze who would benefit the most from the destruction of the pipelines and what it means for Germany and the rest of the world, it's Dirk Pohlmann.
First, I would like to remind the viewers or listeners, I don't know if they are familiar with that. In 1982, the United States blew up the Uringoy-Chelyabinsk pipeline, the Yamal pipeline, after Chancellor Helmut Schmidt had done what is called a tube deal with Russia. So German industry would provide Russia with tubing for the pipeline, and Germany would get gas and oil to a cheap price. Schmidt at that time delivered more than 8 billion marks, or I think it was dollars really, which would be the double amount, to the Soviet Union. And that was contrary to what the United States wanted at that time. They wanted to bring the oil price down, which they were able to do together with Saudi Arabia, and to ruin Russia, which, by the way, our foreign minister Baerbock has just said she wants to do the same. She wants to ruin Russia. In 82, with the Reagan government, it really worked. So the prices were going down, but Schmidt was counteracting on that. He had in mind the 1973 energy crisis, which I remember very well because I was roller skating on the Autobahn at that time. No cars driving. They were forbidden to drive on the weekends to save gas. So that was in the minds of every German who experienced that. And this is what he wanted, safe energy. And that's what Russia, Soviet Union had delivered to Germany for a long time. I mean, they weren't friends, but the Soviet Union had an excellent reputation for delivering, always keeping the contracts. So Germany got cheap energy. And what the US did at that time was the Soviets were in dire need of computer chips. They didn't produce them. So they were trying to get them and that they had an own task force called X at the KGB. To get computer chips, and America delivered it to them, but they were malfunctioning chips. So they were flooding the Soviet Union with computer chips, which were garbage, and the Soviets built it into everything. And then afterwards, yeah, what happened is that this pipeline blew up because the pumping stations were oscillating with the pressure. And in my documentary at that time, Deception, the Reagan Method, I have Thomas Reed, who was in the National Security Council at that time, and he explained how they saw in Washington, in the nuclear, let's say, they saw the satellites delivered a huge explosion, the biggest man-made explosion not being a nuclear weapon. It was like a 3-kiloton burst, he said. And somebody came and said, don't worry, it's us, it's the CIA, we did it. And then he said, okay. So that was blowing up the pipeline to stop the flow of energy. There are other, I can go on for hours now. I just will go with one more example that is in the 60s. Enrico Mattei, he was the head of the Italian Eni, which is the carbohydrate, the big company, the national company of Italy at that time, delivering about oil and gas. For example, Eni started with the islands, with the oil platforms in the sea. They invented that. They were the first ones to have a tanker fleet to bolster the price. And Enrico Mattei was a kind of a manager with political aspirations. He was the game changer. Everyone. So when the Americans came to the northern African countries, they said, look, we get 75% of the revenue that we get from producing the oil in your country, and the companies will be American ones. And Enrico Mattei went there and said, you will get 75%, and we make joint ventures. So everyone, you can understand, wanted to go along with Enrico Mattei and Eni. And there is a paper from the CIA where the American mineral oil industry said that Enrico Mattei was an even greater villain, a bigger villain than the Soviet Union itself was, and he was threatened to be killed. They tried it once. They put a screwdriver into the jet intake of a small private jet. He had a private jet for four persons. That was picked up by the pilot. But then 2 weeks later, the plane crashed approaching Milan. And only 40 years later, it was clear. At that time, it was the conspiracy theory who was killed because of all his plans. But 40 years later, it was proven that it was murder. They got the bodies out of the ground and they had metal splinters in the bones. So there was an explosion in the plane. So that is, and Enrico Mattei, what he did shortly before, he made the biggest industrial deal ever that Italy had ever done with the Soviet Union oil and gas. So this is the reason why the American oil industry said he's the biggest villain that exists in Europe at that time. So you have a long history of these kind of things trying to stop this dealing between European countries with the Soviet Union or Russia now, because what they have, Soviet Union or Russia, still Russia. I mean, Soviet Union was much bigger, about double the population Russia has now. But what they have is this enormous amount of natural resources. And that is that's 11 time zones, the country, the biggest country in the world. And that's what they have, and this is what they can offer. And the pain in America and Great Britain, before that Great Britain, was always that Germany and Russia or Soviet Union would work together one way or another. So let's say German engineering helping with Russian natural resources and both around. That would be really detrimental. That's what Brzezinski wrote about. That's what Friedman from his that think tank talked about. So this is the same now. And as you just have shown, Christina, what we get now in Germany on the media, which is ridiculous, is it was Putin. We are supposed to believe that this time Putin was blowing up his own pipeline, which he even offered a few days ago. If you have problems in the wintertime, and we have problems in the wintertime, it's going to be very cold in Germany. We're talking about how to save energy by doing not showers anymore with the hot water. Yeah. Wow. It's we are talking about our prices. If I buy a piece of butter here, it's about two times as much now as 6 weeks ago. So we are running into being cold and hungry in the winter time, and we are told that it's necessary because we have to fight Putin. And now we are told he not only bombards his own nuclear plants in Ukraine, which are under his control. We've been told that for quite some time, but now that he also blows up his own pipeline, which is an access to the Western money that he, I mean, right now, nothing, but what would be his reason to blow it up? But there's military implications, but maybe you want to say something now because I'm talking too long.
Well, I want to ask you something. I was just reading this report that the USS Kearsarge, have you heard about this? It's an amphibious
Yes.
assault ship, was in the area. Of course, they say that they were doing exercises with other countries, I guess Finland, Denmark, Yep. et cetera.
The Kearsarge is an aircraft carrier, really, a small one. I think 35 planes and helicopters. It's not one of these huge aircraft carriers, the 11 that America has. It's a smaller one. It has been there with a fleet of other ships. There's also a submarine involved in that. And there are several things. I myself doubt that it was an operation of the Kearsarge, because these things usually are done with midget submarines, which are transported by ships toward their operation area. And they are civilian ships. It's pretty much a James Bond scenario. If you know this James Bond, where they open up a tanker and the submarine gets in or out, that's reality. The United States Navy has several of these
Again,
ships.
The kind yeah, of so, thing that the first CIA's first podcast, I'm sure you've heard about it, the Langley Files, he said, oh, yeah, that James Bond stuff, you know, we don't do much of that.
I've done several of my documentaries. I showed things which the CIA really used. For example, the Fulton pickup system, which was used in Thunderball, I think it was called, in USA. Where in the end, his mistress and James Bond are in a boat, and they're picked up. They blow up a small balloon, and they're picked up by an airplane. This is the original CIA airplane that was used in the James Bond movie, that was used for operation. I have the whole documentary about that. That was Operation Cold Feet at the North Pole.
Who do you think did it?
If I would have to bet money on it, I would say the operation is American, but they would use other nations, like what they did in the Cold War with Sweden. Sweden was swamped with submarine intrusions into their waters. I will talk next week on Saturday on TNT about that with a specialist from Sweden. And they have used at that time Italian mini subs for that. And the question was, there was a question at that time to John F. Lehman, who was the Secretary of the Navy, my expert, who will be on the show on Saturday, asked him, why did you use Italian subs? He said, oh, because it was good for plausible deniability. You could say, all these Italian captains, they are so hot-blooded and they do strange stuff. But of course, it has nothing to do with us. So it and so, for example, right now, it would be a good country to use would be Poland, because they are eager to get even with the Russians. They don't have a very, they have 1 kilo class submarine. They had two Swedish submarines, Swedish production submarines in the Navy. I don't know if they still have them. They wanted a newer one, but they would be capable and willing to do that with
mini subs. Really? You think their prime minister would go for that?
Yes, he's even talked about it. And you may know that Mr. Sikorski, who had been the foreign minister of Poland, he sent a tweet after the pipeline was destroyed, a tweet of the photo of the gas bubbling up. That's about 1 kilometer of bubbles in the Baltic, saying thank you, USA. So that is Radoslav Sikorski, the former foreign minister. By the way, the husband of Anne Applebaum from the deep in the American elite connected. So there's something, if you know John Helmer, who has been a diplomat, has the blog Dancing with Bears. He lives in Moscow, longest standing correspondent there. He had been advisor to Papandreou, to the Greek government. He's a quite interesting guy. And he wrote about that today. Yeah. You can also go to Moon of Alabama, who is a German-American guy who does excellent work, much better than the networks on producing. He has written a piece today which says Who Done It, and that has a ton of information on that. You can go to Pepe Escobar, who wrote about it and sends tweets about this. So all of those people, including me, think we listened to Joe Biden. I mean, he was standing next to Chancellor Scholz telling that the German-Russian pipeline is under the control of the United States. We blow it up if we think it's necessary, humiliating him while he stands next to the German chancellor who did nothing. I had friends calling me at that time asking, what do they have in their hands against Scholz that he just stands there like a schoolboy? Not even saying that's our business or something like that. It isn't Germany's business, in effect. And it's also that the American parliament had an own, I don't know what you called it, the committee or so for the sanctions against Nord Stream 2. They were talking about how to stop Nord Stream 2 in the American parliament and handing out sanctions to the German CEOs of the company. So it's quite clear who's showing whom, who has the big stick in his hand and who has to obey. So I would say definitely USA in lead of
this. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. This is the Omer and Borgeson Show on TNT Radio Live. We'll be right back after these messages.
You should hear what Jesse Zurawell is talking about.
In addition to calling up 300,000 reservists, which does not include conscripts or university students, Putin has made some what could be described as inflammatory statements, if I can use that cliche, regarding the possible use of nuclear weapons.
In Russian language media, I mean, especially among hardliners, like people who really support the special operation, they're saying this is really, really bad because, first of all, territorial gains aside, what basically has happened is that Russia took control of territory, and then those Ukrainians who wanted to cooperate with Russia and consider themselves Russian, if the idea here was that Russia was going to go into Ukraine to protect ethnic Russians, to guarantee that, you know, Ukrainians can speak Russian and live in harmony and peace with Russia, the problem is that all these territories that Russia goes into, they're not guaranteeing that they're staying, you know? And sometimes, in some cases, they say like, oh yeah, we're here forever. And then, you know, a month later, they leave. How can you do this? It's so self-defeating, and it makes cooperation or welcoming the Russian military as liberators impossible. It's like a death sentence.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
The story behind the biggest election takeover in history.
We're only now being able to finally confirm exactly how this worked.
Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are donating more money to local governments ahead of the election. $100 million on top of a $300 million gift.
The most money any individual has ever spent to win a presidential campaign in the history of our country.
The election was bought way before Election Day.
They stole it fair and square. They changed the voting rules in the middle of the game.
A nation divided, rigged.
It was a rigged election. People have to find out what happened
at SalemNow.com.
This is where you get your daily ration of high-velocity conversation. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with Germany's best investigative reporter, Dirk Pohlmann, telling us who he thinks was behind this Nord Stream pipeline sabotage, as people are saying it is. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's some more things that you should know. Which is that the Baltic Sea is under constant surveillance. It's the area in the 60s, the United States started with hydrophones, with a network which was called SOSUS, which would record. There was no place to hide in the ocean anymore, not only for ships, but also for submarines. And it went into, it was developed, that was Bobby Ray Inman, the CIA and NSA chief, who had his career. His career was really jet rocketed by these developments of the hydrophones there. Because what this delivers is that whatever ship is sailing through the Baltic, it's not only that from the noises from the ship that you can say which type of ship it is, that you can say which individual ship is going there. So there's constant monitoring of the Baltic Sea, and that is of course from both sides. But people should in the military, they should be able to see who was driving there, then was sailing around in these area, in these waters. Then you have to understand, it doesn't have to, if you put an explosive device there, the Baltic Sea is not very deep. Usually the average deep is 52 meters. So the highest deep is 40 or 459 meters, but around this pipeline, it's about 70 meters. And this is a depth where divers can go. Even, you know, if you're a recreational diver, this is below your depth, but military divers can do it. And the military has divers who can go up to 400 meters. That would be 1,200 feet. Free diving, that equipment exists. That is specialized equipment. That's not usual, but it exists. And the Americans have been using submarines, for example, to tap the wires between the Sea of Ochotsk, between Petropavlovsk, which is the Pacific fleet harbor of the Soviets, and Moscow in the 60s already. So they were listening, they had tapping devices in the lines in the sea to these telephone lines. It could listen what the Soviets were talking about. So
I want to interrupt you here for a second, because I have a question I'm curious about. You suspect that, you know, the U.S. is behind this explosion of the Nord Stream. What is the benefit? In other words, is it just to make everybody assume that it was Putin and now he's really an evil guy? I mean, we know he's evil, but now he's really, really evil. And that gets more support for this continued war. Are we in World War III already and we just don't know it?
I think it's a little bit more complicated, because what happened is that the European economies, and especially the German economy, is running down. We are in an inflation, and we will go into a recession. And it is getting rid of a competitor. Germany is it has been the world champion in exports, and now its companies, our main companies, that's for example cars or chemical industry, So cars would be BMW, Volkswagen, and Daimler-Benz. And chemistry would be BASF, for example. And all of them, they are already contemplating to leave Germany. Because with the loss of the gas is the lifeline, the lifeblood of the German economy. So why should the United States do this? I think we have in Germany, we have to face the reality that the United States is in kind of a war with Germany. You can, it's not only, it is diminishing, doing new things in Europe. There's at the same time that this conflict with Ukraine is running, the European Union, which is has no power, you can see it. It's not really, it didn't stand up to anything. And now the Britons left the European Union, and for example, Poland and the Baltic states, and some other that's called the Trimarium, some states which Rumsfeld called New Europe, are seeing the chance to have the old balance of power in Europe, which was Germany plus France as the leading nations and the most industrious nations. Italy on top of that, Italy belongs to the two, then in a way, Spain, as I said, Great Britain does not belong to that. So have a new Europe and leave the old Europe behind. So having a continent which is not a competitor on the economic scale, the United States had the problem with China. In terms of economy, that would be an advantage. So it's not only about the current conflict. If you, for example, listen to the people from the Duran, which I regard as a good information source, they said in the beginning of the Ukraine war, they said this war is about Nord Stream 2, stopping Nord Stream 2, that the whole conflict has the main purpose of stopping this, the possibility that the Eurasian, let's say, reunification, that you have the Western European industrious countries, you have the Russians and Chinese having a common market, that would be declassified. It would put America into the second place. So that was looming on the horizon. And what they do now is split that up. They will also try to split Russia from China, which will be very difficult.
I want to ask you one last question really quickly. It's got to be quick because we got to move on to our next segment. No, it's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, brilliant what you say. I wish we had booked you for the full hour. But anyway, talk to us about the 6 years of immigration for Germany, all these people coming in. How has that affected the country and the economy?
It was, you know, that our Chancellor Merkel said, we're going to do it and we'll succeed. We're coping with that. We have quite a lot of immigration, and it has really divided the country into several people who said, okay, we can do that. It's pretty much like Sweden in the same situation, where a lot of people said, okay, we will be a good host. If they're refugees, if you're people fleeing from war, we'll take them up. But the problem is that if you have a social security system, a strong social security system, like in Germany, so if the state is providing, if you're unemployed, we have, you know, the state provides Medicare in Germany for the people. You get your rent from the state. And if you, this is not possible with a strong influx from people who come from the outside. And then if they work, they put money into it, but you overextend your economic system. So if you have a strong social security system in a country, an influx of immigrants, which is a huge wave at the time, creates a lot of problems. And this is what we had. So it's squeaking in the mechanics, so to speak. So it was, it is, and it was, the still people, it's divided. The people say we should have done it, we shouldn't have done it. But it led to a rise of right-wing parties, like in the rest of Europe, could say, who were not in favor of that. So it meant a political turmoil and an economic turmoil.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. We might have to bring you on to talk about what's going on in Germany with the immigration. But I want to thank you so much for coming on, Dirk. We're going to take a brief break right now. This is Omira and Borgeson Show. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Hurricane Ian rapidly intensified off Florida's southwest coast Wednesday morning, gaining top winds of 155 miles per hour, just shy of the most dangerous Category 5 status. North Korea has test-fired two more missiles the day before Vice President Harris goes to South Korea. Russia is preparing to annex four more areas of Ukraine its troops took control of during the invasion, following a referendum vote that the U.S. claims is a sham.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government delivered by the NFF.
Suck it up.
It's not a big deal.
Snap out.
Just get over it.
We've all heard it. But if you're experiencing extreme stress, it's not just in your head. It can affect your entire body because toxic stress can hurt us physically without us even knowing it. If you've lost a job, worry about your next meal, or have trouble making it through the day, if you're feeling the effects of stress, we can help. Text STRESS to 211-211 to find a solution.
If you miss your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. Now there's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
Welcome back to Omira and Borgeson Show. We're going to switch gears here now and take a look at the increased push to sexualize children at younger and younger ages through school sex education programs. Gender identity, masturbation, and oral and anal sex is what New Jersey schools are preparing to teach their state's children. Parents all over the country are fed up and fighting back. Here are just a few examples.
I'm going to read you an assignment given to my 15-year-old daughter at a local high school.
Kendra Evans appears to be rattled as she stands before the Clark County School District Board last week. The mother, claiming her daughter was upset about what her high school teacher assigned her to memorize in front of her class and sharing a portion with the board.
I don't love you. It's not you. It's just I don't like your or any in that case.
CCSD board members quickly stop the public comment over the derogative language, and the mic is turned off.
Here's an excerpt, and I'm going to really try to be careful so I don't get kicked out. Excited now, he pushed into her. As she squeezed her eyes in tightly as she could, her tongue circled her lips. He pushed harder, his breath heavy and labored. She scratched his back, and he cried out. She bit his ear and pulled his hair. There's a lot more to it. 50 Shades of Grey in CCSD.
Excuse me.
Yes.
We have children at home.
I know.
It's live streaming, and it's really not appropriate.
Don't you find the irony in that? You're exactly saying exactly what I'm telling you.
You have lost sight of your responsibilities to educate our children. Parents are learning, watching, and taking action.
Carmel Clay parents spoke out at Monday night school board meeting.
But this is totally inappropriate for K-2 students to be discussing this with anybody but their parents.
Against sexually explicit content in books accessible by CCS students.
If I were to read it to you, you would not be able to air it because it would be against FCC obscenity laws.
I knew the dangers of raising kids in a digital world and all the sexual and pornographic content, but finding out the content of the books in my kids' school has been a big slap in the face.
To discuss this disturbing trend in New Jersey, State Senator Holly Schapisi, who is none too happy with the state's new sex education program being implemented this fall. Senator Schapisi, thank you for joining us today. I've read some of the new standards, which include discussions for second graders to include understanding gender norms, by fifth grade, understanding masturbation, and by eighth grade, anal sex and pregnancy options. Are you hearing from any parents in your district? And what are they saying about these new standards?
It's one of the largest hotbed discussion items right now, I think, in New Jersey. And I think, for almost everybody I've spoken to, it really is based upon age appropriateness. Reasonable people can agree to disagree on, whether or not they want their children learning certain things in sex ed. But it's the ages upon which the state is mandating this. And we keep seeing those ages go lower and lower and lower. So under the new legislation and the mandates that came out from the State Department of Education, you're correct. By fifth grade, kids have to be taught about masturbation, first, second grade, gender identity, eighth grade, anal, vaginal, oral sex. And some of the school districts, because of the lack of guidance provided by the State Department of Education, have actually even had those standards go lower. So I had parents from a district outside of my own that sent me a sample curriculum that they had just received for their third grader. And in third grade, they're being taught about masturbation. They're being taught about the different ways somebody can get pregnant. And parents have very legitimate concerns. I have a sixth grader. When I looked at his health class, among some of the things that an 11-year-old has to be able to define and understand includes terms like pansexuality. Why does an 11-year-old have to understand a term that even most adults have to Google? Because up until a couple of years ago, the term wasn't even around. And I think that it's when you talk about it in concept in terms of age appropriateness, with even like books that are being presented in school. We just heard a clip from a mom, and in middle school, books like Gender Queer are now available. And if you order it and actually look at it, if I gave that to my neighbor's kid, I would probably get arrested. Or if I brought it into work and discussed it with my colleagues at my law firm, I'd get written up by HR. So it is very concerning.
What's weird is there's a double standard. Why is it that it's okay to have this material in schools, but in various other venues, including at hearings, Department of Ed hearings, you can't listen to this stuff because it's pornography?
Well, even beyond that, when people attempt to share some of the screenshots of these books on my official Facebook page, Facebook flags it and takes it down as pornographic material. But yet people are arguing that, it's essential for the well-being of our children to have access to these materials, where if it got put into a movie, it would absolutely be mature or X. And you're sitting there and you're going, why can't we have rational discussion on the efficacy of what is being pushed in our schools right now?
Well, according to these standards, if I'm reading correctly, it seems like there's a lot of grooming going on. In other words, there are very specific things that are in the lesson plans. It says, quote, you might feel like you're a boy, even if you have body parts that some people might tell you are girl parts. To me, that's grooming.
It goes beyond kind of the concept of grooming. It's more a function of we're experimenting on our children. There is no long-term studies available because nothing like this has ever occurred, where you're injecting sexuality into almost everything. You're eliminating concepts of gender amongst the youngest, most impressionable children. We're seeing numbers skyrocket of children who believe they may be transgender or may be part of the LGBTQ community. And it's not an organic increase. And I think that the long-term harmful impact, this isn't like, okay, I'm going to experiment. I'm not sure if I'm straight or I'm bi or I'm gay. This is, I'm a boy and I now believe I'm a girl. And schools in New Jersey have gone so far that under mandates put forth by the Attorney General's Office and the State Department of Education, schools and teachers are prohibited from talking to parents about their child identifying as a different gender. And teachers are given from their attorneys and the school boards that it is impermissible to have these discussions with parents, even amongst the youngest age of kids. And so a kid could come to school, be fed this, and then say, well, I think maybe I'm a girl. And meanwhile, the kid may just be gay or bi or effeminate. And the parent has no role and no ability to know that their child is actually identifying as something else at school. And the teachers are precluded from having these real, you know, important discussions with parents being kind of now ostracized or being couched as the villain or the bad guy in their own child's upbringing. And I think that's where a lot of parents are pushing back and having really grave concerns.
You know, I find this disturbing because I have covered the mental health industry for 25 years. And I know that in schools, if a kid came to school and said, you know, I'm so depressed, the counselors, the mental health people in the school, everybody would be involved. Everybody would be calling the parents. We need to, you know, do something for this kid. But now you're saying with this particular instance, this sexualized side of it, parents aren't allowed to know.
Parents are prohibited from getting information from the school on it. And even more disturbing, there are bills that are working their way through the legislature right now, sponsored by some of my Democratic colleagues, that would lower the age of consent for even mental health treatment to 13, 14 years of age, where parents are precluded from getting any information and the child would be able to get medication or various other things without the parents even being aware. And you couple that with some of these other initiatives and you sit there and I go, for my 11-year-old who has a lactose intolerance, I've got to get doctor's notes and a whole host of stuff for my child to even be able to use lactate in school. And yet for, you know, things of this magnitude, we're saying, a young child has full capacity with a trusted adult outside of the parents to make these determinations.
Do the parents I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. Who decided that sex ed was important to the education of children, especially young children? I mean, I'm older than dirt. And when I went to school, you know, biology class in high school, you learned about reproduction. That was it. There was no like social, you know, this business about gender identity, teaching people gender identity. To me, that's extremely controversial. Why is this even allowed to be an issue in schools? Why don't we let kids grow up and be kids and that sex stuff and gender stuff and whatever, let them learn it organically over time as they experience life so that they could just be themselves. I mean, did this become a have to do for the educational system?
It became a far left bent that, you know, this is what has to take place. And the timing of it in New Jersey is beyond incomprehensible and also unconscionable. While these bills were moving forward, our schools were shut. Our children were not going to school. Parents were having to jump in. Parents such as myself who work full time found ourselves all of a sudden having to become our children's teachers and everything else as well. And there were no plans, no guidance to address learning loss, to address the mental health impact of these kids being shut down, or any of the things, including how to reopen our schools. No discussions, no anything. Instead, in the height of the pandemic, while nobody was paying attention to the nonsense going on in Trenton, they decided that they had to incorporate, and it was two separate bills. One's diversity, equity, inclusion for kindergarten through 12th grade that parents cannot opt out of. There is no way of opting out of that mandate. And that includes having to incorporate sexual type of stuff into every single topic from kindergarten through 12th grade. And then you separately had the State Department of Education that simultaneously put this other thing forward about the new sex guidance.
So this was all done by the Board of Education. There was no parental input. There was nobody voted on what we want here. No, I mean, is that what you're telling us, that this was all just done through the bureaucrats?
It was done through unelected bureaucrats at the height of the pandemic while our schools were closed.
And now that the parents are aware of it, is there any pushback?
Tremendous. We have the most incredible Board of Ed races throughout the entire state. In fact, people are spending more money on the Board of Ed races and local council races right now. Parents are showing up in droves to their Board of Ed meetings for the very first time. And you have the state doubling down right now, where the Department of Education just a couple of days ago came forward and said, schools that aren't complying with what we mandate are going to get penalized. And it could be everything from monitors being put in your schools, Board of Ed members being replaced, potential loss of state aid for school funding. And on top of it, now that the school year has begun, parents can't just opt in or opt out. Parents are being told that they must provide a written letter to the principal of the school indicating that they have specific moral or religious objections to what's right. being taught.
Look, we're going to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I love when conservatives come to the rescue of other conservatives. Tooting their own horn, Fox News says Facebook has reversed a permanent ban on conservative children's book publisher Brave Books after Fox Business started asking questions about the ban. Brave Books publishes books for 4 to 12-year-olds. They told Fox that Facebook suspended them and denied an appeal. The publisher says they put out books that have pro-God, pro-America, and anti-woke values. Brave Books founder Trent Talbot called the suspension an existential threat to the company since they rely on Facebook advertising. The publisher produced a Facebook message which provided no explanation for the ban and stated that it was their final decision. Talbot called the incident a prime example of big tech today, adding they shut down small companies who say anything contrary to their woke agendas. And according to Talbot, a suspension from Google earlier this year was also reversed after Fox News reported on it. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine taking your child to school where all the other kids have access to textbooks, paper, and pencils, but your child is only allowed to listen. Would you be okay with that? That's what it means to be blind. For every 100 books a sighted child can access, a blind child has access to less than 5. Help put the world at the fingertips of vision-impaired kids. Donate now at braillehouse.org.au.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with New Jersey State Senator Holly Schapisi, who is discussing with us the state's new sex education program. Okay, so what if you're a parent, I don't even think it's about being conservative or not conservative. You just don't want your kid to be part of any sex education program in school. How do you escape this? I mean, can you go to a private school? What about Catholic schools? I'm sure they're not going to go along with this program, for example.
Yeah, Christine, that's a good question.
Jewish yeshivas.
Are the religious schools going to allow that? I mean, are they going to be forced to participate in that program?
Well, right now, the state sex ed program is for public schools and charter schools. For purposes of private schools, there's more flexibility and parents can opt their children out of the sex ed standards. But once again, you have the separate diversity, equity, inclusion bill that you cannot opt out of. And with that, kindergarten, first, second grade, you have to teach about gender identity and all of the more controversial components of it in every class. And so it's something that, you know, depending upon your school district and how in they are into teaching what some of the model curriculum are that have been created by groups like Advocates for Youth and these different national groups, some of it is pretty hairy. And so I think we're seeing parents get more engaged to understand exactly what is being taught to their children in the public schools. But for religious schools, as part of the sex education, you now must learn about abortion. You must learn about a whole host of other things that may not comport with people's religious values. So I think they would have a much tougher time trying to impose that on religious schools as well.
So let me ask you, it says here that if parents want to opt out that because there's a conflict of their conscience or sincerely held moral or religious beliefs, you know, isn't that stigmatizing those kids that are opting out?
And that's one of the arguments and concerns that parents have shared. And they said, you know, how is my child going to be treated if I do opt them out? Right. You know, are they still going to, you know, participate in other things? How will the schools handle that? As well as, you know, okay, I opt my kid out, but yet they're learning about this stuff in other classes, you know. And is it better to keep them in so that I can understand what's going on and talk to my own child, or do I take them out of it?
Wow.
I mean, gender identity is sex education. I'm sorry. Because right. It's all about, you know, talking about sexual preferences, even though obviously, really, gender identity in reality, like where the rubber meets the road reality, we're talking about male and female.
Period. Well, that's no longer, because right. Under the lesson plans for sex ed, the model lesson plans, you are not permitted to say male and female. It's person what? With a uterus. It's person with a penis. And it is
a vagina.
It's person who is pregnant. There is no longer a differentiation
but
between
this
male
is
and
the, wait a second. This is not sex ed. This is a social engineering program. That's what this right. is. And I really think, I mean, if I were to go to court on this thing, if I had a young child, boy, woof, my hair's on fire. I would actually go to court with that argument. This is not sexual education. This is a social engineering program that is asking my child to take in all kinds of information that my child, first of all, is too young to be taking in. And, you know, eventually my kid will learn it at one point, but let my kid just be a child, you know?
When my child was 5-6 years old, I was just hoping that they weren't biting another kid and eating chocolate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and my daughter honestly and truly believed she was a mermaid. And, you know, the Little Mermaid had come out during that time. She was infatuated with it. For Christmas, she made us buy her a mermaid tail and had an epic freak out when we put her into the bathtub and she didn't turn into a real mermaid. I mean, at those ages, you tell a kid enough times you're a unicorn, they believe they're a unicorn.
Exactly.
You know, they believe that leprechauns are real. They set leprechaun traps. Like, you know, and so to be pushing social agenda type of stuff and not just teaching kids to be kind and accepting of each other at those ages, I do believe is trying to socially orchestrate, you know, a different outcome. And that's, I think, where a lot of parents have legitimate concerns.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
I think it's also corrosive, you know, I mean, it's corrosive to the social fabric when you create this social engineering agenda that brings in, I mean, let's face it, you can call transgender whatever you want, but in order to become a transgender, you've got to do unnatural things to yourself to become what you think, you know, in your heart and maybe in your pants you think you are, you know. And so that requires drugs, that's not natural. So why don't we let kids just be natural human beings going along the way, discovering the world and not having to get into this very, very heavy sexual social engineering until, you know, they're, you know, semi-adults, at least, you know, 17, 18.
Well, plus you have to wonder.
You know, it is a problematic because if you look at other countries, like even Finland, Sweden, Norway, which are very progressive, liberal type of countries that were at the forefront of a lot of this medical intervention and everything else, they put a moratorium themselves on minors because they had the ability to do more of a longitudinal study and see the detrimental impact that it was having in the number of kids who reversed or attempted to reverse as they got into their 20s. And so I think we have to take a much more measured approach and not be, you know, pushing ideology that could have very harmful impacts in the future that nobody has really taken a step back and had open, honest conversation about.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to wrap this up with first saying thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciate it so much. Also, congratulations. I looked up New Jersey as far as education. You guys are right at the top. So you're doing something right, which is great. Okay. But I think we're taking the wrong turn at this point with this particular issue. And maybe the parents will step in and correct that.